on a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning to you all. Welcome. It's Rosie on the house. Your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years. It is the 7 o'clock hour. It is our Arizona Interesting People, Places, and Things. And we're on the rodeo trail this weekend. It's the Queen Creek Junior Rodeo Association's last event of this season. So we're in Prescott. We're wrapping up it. We always start the season in high country around October. Williams or Flagstaff or Payson or Prescott move down to the valley or Tucson, Marana, Queen Creek, Chandler during the winter months, and then we finish back up on top. And we were trying to figure out, what are we going to do for the 7 o'clock hour? When we travel, being an Arizona broadcast, we try and look for things, people in that local area. And I got word, I'm not sure where I saw it, but there was a very special man who was retiring, and I reached out to him and said, you know, would you consider coming and doing an hour broadcast? And he said, that's just not my thing. I'm sorry. I said, no worries. Congratulations on retirement. And we'll be in touch. And I don't know, about 5-10 minutes later, Brent called back and said, you know what? Mommy made me do it.
She threatened me. She said I'd be a fool not to have the opportunity.
Well, Brent Smith, we appreciate your time this Saturday morning. You were on Whiskey Row working for 46 years.
That's correct. I got my first job at the Palace when I was 21 years old in 1971. And actually, I was a little less than 21 years old, but nobody counted in those days. So.
Now, were you a native of Prescott, or was this a new job that moved you to Prescott?
Actually, I was raised here in Prescott. My family immigrated here in 1953. My father was a blacksmith and had worked in the coal mines in Pennsylvania originally, and decided he had gotten a job in California, and so we packed ourselves up in a 1948 Mercury Woody and headed from Pennsylvania toward California. And back in those days, before the interstate was finished, you had to get off 66, and he came through Jerome. And when he saw what Jerome was like, he said, my God, if where we're going in California for me to work as a blacksmith is like this, like it is in West Virginia, where you need a spike in your hiney so you can hang on the side of the hill, we're stopping in the next flat spot. So guess what? We came down off of Jerome into Prescott, and the next day my father applied for a job at Arizona Mining Supply and Blacksmithing, and he never went to California in his whole life, and that was in 1953.
Well, I think that was a smart move for him. I'm glad he stopped through here. So you were at this time in school.
I was at that time in 1953. I was 2 years old.
Okay, I didn't do the math yet. So you're 2 years old. So you basically don't remember much of Pennsylvania. I mean, this is home
to
you.
Yes. And I was raised here in the old stage stop between Prescott and Skull Valley.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and my dad blacksmithed for all the mines here. They were still open in those days. Prescott was still a working town. So he blacksmithed for the ranches also. He wasn't a farrier, so he didn't shoe horses, but he made all the branding irons within a 50-mile radius of here.
That's a special story. So yeah. How long did he blacksmith in Prescott?
Up until he died in 1990, and he blacksmithed up until he was in his late 60s.
So your family history has a reputation of once you're in a trade, y'all stick with that.
We do. We are not people to change jobs. It's just, and of course, this bartending is not a trade. I was educated to be a minister. I went to Abilene Christian College in Abilene, Texas.
Well, you have an incredible vocabulary. So I knew there had to be something behind the more than just getting politicians drunk at the Jersey Lily.
Well, they all have pretty highfalutin vocabularies, so you can pick up a little off of them, even though they misuse it usually.
So you went to school for minister in Abilene, Texas, and you just came home after school to start looking for a job?
Or? Well, actually, I'll tell you, I lacked 17 hours of a degree in theology, and I also attended a couple of summer schools at Harvard in theology with the man who ended up being president of Abilene Christian University. But I woke up one morning at the end of my junior year, and God said, get out. And I, as clear as I hear, well, maybe I do hear voices in my head. I don't know.
But you heard that voice.
I did. And I think that it was probably a good thing, because I think I would have been the Jim and Tammy Faye Baker of the world. And there would have been another one out there after you. And of course, coming home, I had people skills from seminary, because you go to, of course, a school of preaching. And I really didn't have any other good job skills. And my father, rest his soul, never had a drink in his whole life. We came from a non-drinking, no smoking, no cards, no nothing family. So for me to have a job on Whiskey Row at 21, he was never in a place that I worked, because they served alcohol. So,
did that rub him the wrong way, or was he accepting of it?
Actually, it was all right. And him and his father were blown up in the coal mines when he was 16, and his father died. And so he promised his mother he would never touch alcohol in his whole life. So that's how he, and never shave his mustache, because his dad had a mustache. So you know how people make funny family promises.
How long did he let that grow? Did he have like a Duck Dynasty mustache by the end, or
no.
Did he keep it nice and trim?
No, it was always well trimmed. Yeah, because he was also a Sunday school teacher and everything else. So,
You come back to Prescott, and yeah. Did you just look at classifieds? What made you look at Commander's Palace? Obviously, a very famous place, very well known.
Yeah. Like I said, I was getting kind of frustrated job searching. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I did know I was not going to go back to church school and finish up. And I just kind of bounded in and out the doors on Whiskey Row. I looked for restaurant work and things, and it just happened that they had a need for a bar back. And I spent about a week being a bar back till I was a regular bartender. And that was for Shel Dunbar, who I think bought the Palace, him and his partner B.H. Smith, about probably 1938. And they ran slot machines in Jerome. Of course, in those days, Jerome was like 15,000 people, and Prescott was about 6 or 7 maximum. And he said when the Depression hit, that he changed the slot machines from dollars to nickels and quarters, and they collected enough cash during those desperate times to buy the Palace Hotel and the Palace Bar for cash.
Wow. So,
yeah. And he was still alive in 71 when I went to work for him. He was old, but he was fun. He was quite a character.
So you hit the scene in 71 on Whiskey Row, Commander's Palace. Where?
Just the Palace.
Where? Yeah. Just the Palace. I'm sorry. Yeah. My family's from Louisiana. Commander's Palace is a very famous New Orleans bar, and I do that all the time. Not bar, but like a five-star dining experience. Okay. So I do that all the time. Yeah. The Palace.
Yeah.
You hit the Palace in 71. Was this before Junior Bonner? I mean, were you here when they filmed?
Yeah. In fact, I was working at the Palace. I think I can't remember. You know, when you've worked so many years somewhere, it's really hard to have any chronology to how things actually occurred. But I was there, and of course I think they started filming that in 72, and it was released in 73, or they did it earlier in the year in 72. Some of it was filmed during the Frontier Days celebration, but all of the bar scenes and stuff there were actually done earlier than that, because the town is so congested anyway. But myself being so young, they furloughed me and the other young employees there because they needed someone who looked old and grizzled and whatever for the bar scenes. You know, so they put all of
they
us
they were trying
on.
To make the Old West look. They needed somebody that looked old, sun-crusted.
And instead of a bunch of 20-year-olds standing behind the bar smiling at everybody and saying, "Can we help you?" So anyway, they furloughed all of us. And Shell, who was a very generous man, the owner, he paid all of our wages for all of us bartenders. I can't even tell you how much it was in those days. It wasn't very much, I'm sure. But he paid us, and then, of course, all of us off-work employees signed up as extras. So we hot-footed it in there, got all signed up, and then we were getting $40 a day plus the wages from the Palace. So we all signed in and went over to Matt's Saloon and sat there for the 6 or 7 hours of filming, come back and signed out and got our money. So we spent it all at the bar next door.
$40 would let you drink for 6 hours at the time?
And leave a very generous tip and have enough to pay your bills.
Nice. So during the filming of that, did it just disrupt the entire town and the bar scene, or did it actually bring a lot?
Oh, it brought tons of people here to see things. And, of course, I met Steve McQueen when he was here. In fact, I had an old Honda, and he actually borrowed it and rode the bike while he was filming here. And I had him sign my helmet because we had helmet laws in those days in Arizona. And, I mean, he didn't even get out of town before I'd sold that helmet for $300 just like that. No, I wish I would have kept it.
I'd say that might be worth a little more than $300 today.
Yeah, I have no idea who even has it. And, of course, I met Ida Lupino because they were doing all the filming. And since we were employees, we kind of had access to a lot of places in the building. You know, we'd come upstairs. The hotel was still operating here at the Palace Hotel. So we would come up here and just hang out. And, of course, in those days, this was pretty much a flop house hotel. You know, you could get it by the afternoon or by the week, or we had people who lived up here for years, you know. So it was an interesting time here on Whiskey Row.
Now, where was this in Steve McQueen's career? I mean, I probably have 90% of his movies, but I don't know where in his – it was just towards the beginning of his career, near the end. Was he already – a huge star? Was he like
Nevada Smith, unknown?
No,
he was. No, he was already a pretty big star in this. So, but I can't tell you exactly when. Like I said, my year-to-year recollection of how things were going, and I was young. I didn't, you know, and I was raised without a TV or anything, so I really wasn't very much of a movie buff anyway.
So this was 1 year after you started working. You have this big movie career. And at this point, are you thinking, man, I could do this for a long time. This is exciting work.
No, what I really thought is, well, you got to do what you have to do. And at that time, me coming fresh out of church school, I didn't have a drink. I went to work there before I was 21 and didn't really have my first drink till I was 23. So I was down there this wide-eyed child with no idea what was going on. But it seemed pretty exciting to me. So, you know, because being raised by such a conservative family, I was never around any of these things. And living where we lived, we didn't come to town. So, you know, there was no, you know, real reason to be
in the 70s, halfway between here and Skull Valley, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, even now, once you get over the hill to pass Granite Mountain, there's nothing.
Well, yeah, in those days, when you took the school bus, they picked us up at our house at 6:30 in the morning. Then we rode to Skull Valley and picked up the kids in Skull Valley. Came back and took the old Contreras Ranch Road out to Williamson Valley to Keykeffer Ranch and then back in. So we got to school at Miller Valley School just in time to start school.
It's Rosie on the House talking with Mr. Brent Smith, retired barkeep here at Whiskey Row for 46 years. We'll be back right after this.